Since the dawn of the 21st century, scientific discovery has rushed forward at lightning speed. Genetics, physics, computerized technology, robotics, virtual reality. Join Derek and Sharon Gilbert as they uncover the truths behind this ultimate scientific deception. Welcome to Sci Friday.
The Science of Satan. Welcome to Sci Friday from Skywatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert. Joining us, our science advisor and my best friend, co-author of the brand new book, Giants, Gods, and Dragons, and of course, the Red Wing Saga, Sharon K. Gilbert.
Hi, sweetie pie. Boy, yep. What a way to open. You've got them all scared now.
Well, you know, it's, and as you said before we began broadcasting, just coincidental that this is taking place as we're recounting ballots like crazy in the United States.
No, it's absolutely coincidental. Yes. You and I had planned to talk last week about Satan, but because your mother needed to go to the doctor, and she's fine, by the way, in case you missed last week's unraveling revelation, tests are negative. She's just fine, but you spent the whole day with her, and therefore we didn't get to record Sci Friday. But we've got some announcements to make about Sci Friday after the break, so don't go away. But we had planned to talk about Satan because during the month of October, it's been a tradition on Sci Friday to discuss the supernatural.
Right. And we think a lot of what we know or think we know about Satan comes from tradition more so than scripture.
You mean he's not all red with horns and a tail and a pitchfork?
Well, no, but there might be some reasons that he's depicted that way. And this comes from the research that I did into the Titans.
But also for a book you're writing now.
And, yes.
Whoa.
So there are some reasons, perhaps, that we have a memory of the great enemy, supernatural enemy of mankind, as being a horned entity with a tail. The cloven hooves, I'm not so sure about those. I think that's kind of made up. But anyway.
Do you know the first time the word appears in the Bible is in the book of Job?
Yes.
If you look at chronological events.
Right. And that's a surprise. A lot of people don't realize that in the Old Testament, the word Satan doesn't appear. It only appears there. It appears in 1 Chronicles, the story of David ordering the census. Contrary to the will of God.
Right.
We see it in Zechariah as well.
Right. We also see it in, of course, in the New Testament, but we see it in Psalms. Psalm 109, set thou a wicked man over him and let Satan stand at his right hand.
But in almost every appearance in the Old Testament, the word is not Satan. It's not a proper name. It's Ha-Shatan, which means the Satan or the adversary or the accuser. So it's almost more of a job description or a job title than it is a proper name. Now, by the New Testament period, it is, in fact, a proper name. Jesus uses it as a proper name.
You know, it's kind of funny. It's almost like it's become a trademark. Okay, it's not my job title anymore. I'm the guy. I'm the best one ever, so I'm taking it as my name. Who knows how that actually works? Because I don't think we understand the supernatural realm nearly as well as we imagine we do.
That's true. That's true. One of the questions that arises then is if the name Satan originated as a title, is it possible that there is more than one entity who has held that position of the accuser or the adversary?
And I think so.
Yeah, and we touched on this on Unraveling Revelation, and there was something that occurred to me later that I wish I'd gone back and it kind of expanded on a little bit, so you know that's partly why we're taking this opportunity. It's never explicit in the book of Genesis, Genesis 3, where we first meet the rebel in Eden, the serpent or Ha-Nakash. It's not explicit that he is, that the Satan of the New Testament is the entity from the garden. Now, I think that is the case, but I don't know that it's necessarily true that the rebel from the garden is the Satan in Job.
I don't know if he is either. For one thing, we have the opportunity, I was sitting on my wire here, we have the opportunity in the original language, the Holy Spirit could have used Ha-Nakash instead of, what is it, Ha-Shatan? Unless that those are two different names or two different jobs for the same entity.
Yeah, and the things get even more convoluted and complicated when we start looking at references to the rebel in Eden in the parallel passages in Ezekiel 28 and Isaiah 14. Now, in those cases, you had Isaiah, who was writing in the 7th century B.C., probably, latter part or the early part of the 7th century B.C., so, you know, 690, 680s B.C., and Ezekiel, who was writing in the 6th century B.C., so probably 100, 125 years later. But scholars pretty much agree that these passages are parallel. But Isaiah was writing a polemic against the king of Babylon. Ezekiel was writing against the king of Tyre. And so there are those who will say, well, this doesn't refer to Satan at all. Okay, I can see why they would say that, but I disagree. I think at the very least, the prophets were using the example of the rebel from Eden to say to the king of Tyre and to the king of Babylon, you're just like this entity who did these things. And so I think we can learn a lot about that rebel from Eden from Ezekiel 28, who is described as the guardian cherub, cherub, who was cast from the mountain of God, because Eden was a garden, but it was also on the mountain of God, in the midst of the stones of fire. And we talked about that on Unraveling Revelation.
Oh, yeah.
How that relates to the book of 1 Enoch, especially chapter 21, where the angels who rebelled were described as burning mountains. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we get into that a lot in, you know, the trumpet judgments in Revelation.
Well, Mike Heiser talks about it as
well. Yes, yes. So you got this idea now that this Nakash, this serpentine entity from Eden, was one of the cherubim, one of the cherubim, a throne guardian in Eden. Okay.
They are described in a way that can be interpreted in our modern vision as a dragon.
Yes. And that relates to the descriptions of the seraphim in Isaiah, who uses the term Nakash and seraph interchangeably, but also back in Numbers 21, the flying serpents who were the biting the Israelites until Moses made the bronze serpent on the pole.
Did you know, by the way, that there is a well in Jerusalem that was called the Dragon Well?
I did not.
I just now, this minute, discovered this, looking up the word dragon in the King James Version, Nehemiah 2:13, and I went out by night by the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, and to the dung port, and viewed the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down.
Huh. Where's that again? That's Nehemiah 2?
Nehemiah 2.
I'm curious to see how that is translated into the English Standard Translation, and I'm not finding the book of Nehemiah. There it is. Why am I finding it?
The word is Tanaim.
Well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. The dragon well. Tanaim ayin.
And verse what again in the...
13. Nehemiah 2:13.
Yeah, okay. I went by the valley gate to the dragon spring.
Mm-hmm.
Into the dung gate. Huh. Okay.
Surprised?
Yeah.
I know I was.
Well, in Isaiah 14, of course, we get another longer description of this entity from Eden. This is the very famous chapter or section that in the King James includes the verse, "How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning."
Morning, yes.
In the ESV, it's O Daystar, son of dawn, Hebrew, Helel ben Shachar. And Shachar, as we've learned, was the name of a Canaanite or Amorite deity.
Well, named that represented the dawn.
Right.
And there was Shalim, which I think Shalim was the one that represented the evening. I'd have to look that up again, but maybe that means the heavens.
Mm-hmm.
But there were two entities, much like there are two in Egyptian. There are two versions of Horus.
Right.
One is the morning and one is the evening.
Yeah. And we see this with Astarte in Canaanite religion as well, where the evening aspect represented by the planet Venus was Astarte, the sex goddess. But in the morning was Attar, the war god.
Mm-hmm.
The male aspect, she was the first gender fluid, gender fluid entity.
Well, I think that's because these entities don't have a gender when they're in their proper estate, their proper home.
That's why they neither marry nor give in marriage in heaven.
Yes.
On earth, it's different.
When they come here, there's something about being in our dimension, if you want to get into Josh Peck territory, that allows them to assume a gender, to assume a sexual appearance.
Manifest in a way that we can apprehend with our senses. So the this entity from Eden in this Isaiah's description in chapter 14, which we've learned through our study for the book Veneration, is not only historic, it's also prophetic. This is recounts when the rebel from Eden is thrown down from heaven to become the Lord of the dead.
Right.
Which actually parallels the description of the life of Baal in the Baal cycle, the Canaanite texts. Sheol beneath is stirred up to meet you. When you come, it rouses the Rephaim to greet you. How you are fallen from heaven, how you are cut down to the ground, you who laid the nations low, etc. The interesting thing here is that in Isaiah 14, 13, you said in your heart, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God, the angels. I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of assembly in the far reaches of the north. Now, that verse there is the Hebrew phrase, Yarkate Tzafon.
Mm-hmm.
The ESV actually adds as a note, the remote parts of Tzafon. When we began this journey, mm-hmm. that was one of the things that jumped out at us in the book of Exodus, Baal Zephon,
where
the
Hebrews... That jumped out. Was that after we moved here or before?
It was after we moved here, and we started... we were on the study of Exodus 14. Why did God direct the Israelites as they were escaping from Egypt to turn back and encamp in front of Baal Zephon?
Well, everybody, that's the mountain. Run back towards the enemy.
Yeah.
What?
The chariots are coming. Mount Zephon was the mountain in the ancient world that was sacred to the storm god, the West Semitic storm god Hadad or Baal in the Bible. So here we get this hint that, wait a minute, this entity that was cast out of heaven, cast off the mountain of God, wants to establish his mount of assembly, which just happens to be the mountain sacred to Baal, who was linked to the Greek storm god Zeus. And in his battle, his epic battle with the chaos monster Typhon,
mm-hmm.
that took place right there at the mount. In fact, scholars now believe that the name of Typhon is derived from Tzafon.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got this connection there. And then in the New Testament, Jesus, when he's accused by the scribes and Pharisees and of casting out demons by the power of Beelzebul, which means Baal the prince, he links that entity to Satan. If his house is divided, how will it stand?
Mm-hmm.
And then in Revelation 2, the letter to Pergamum, I know where you live. It's where Satan dwells, where Satan's seat is.
And he's using that as if it were a proper name for one
entity. Right. And of course, Satan's seat was a reference to the great altar of Zeus, the Greek form of Baal. So here, with that evidence, we can conclude, I think, that the rebel in Eden, the Nakash in Genesis 3, is the entity who manifested to the world as the storm god Baal, Zeus, Jupiter.
Okay, question. Where do the horns come from?
We can talk about that and also talk a little bit about what the future holds for Sci Friday and for us.
Big announcement coming up.
After the break. The Bible is more fantastic than we were ever taught. In our new book, Giants, Gods, and Dragons, Sharon and I show that the giants of Genesis, the gods of Egypt, Canaan, and Babylon, and the dragons described by Job, Isaiah, and John were not only real, they're all through the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. This is a fresh look at end times prophecy that names the four horsemen of the apocalypse and reveals hidden prophecies of the ultimate destruction of the Nephilim, the death of the gods, and the very last enemy destroyed when God creates the new heaven and new earth. Please take advantage of this special Giants, Gods, and Dragons offer from Skywatch TV because we've assembled more than 27 hours of teachings on DVD to go along with our new book, including Wars of the Gods, Volume 1, Search for the Titans, as you follow us from the Holy Land to the Giants' tombs on the mysterious island of Sardinia. Wars of the Gods, Volume 2, Search for the Rephaim, a two-DVD set featuring the first look at the Serpent Mound of Bashan, a tour inside the central core of the megalithic monument to the dead, Gilgal Rephaim, and 4 hours of bonus teachings from me, Pastor Carl Gallops, and Messianic Rabbi Zev Porat. Plus, This Is War, 6 hours of never-before-released teachings recorded live in California last fall. Unmasking the Ancient Gods, 6 presentations by Sharon and me at the 2017 Blessed Hope Prophecy Conference, The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, 10 programs from our weekly series Unraveling Revelation on the Riders of Revelation 6, and The Battle Against Giants, Gods, and Dragons, 4 hours of teachings on spiritual warfare and the prophesied destruction of the supernatural enemies of God. All of this the new book, Giants, Gods, and Dragons, plus 7 DVDs with 27 hours of video on the supernatural war in which you and your family are deployed, is yours for a gift of just $35 plus shipping. Don't miss this offer. Call the SkyWatch TV store at 844-750-4985. That's 844-750-4985. Or log on to SkyWatchTVStore.com. Here are the upcoming conferences and events featuring the team from SkyWatch TV. For a full list and complete information, log on to SkyWatchTV.com/schedule or download the free SkyWatch TV mobile app for iOS, Android, and Amazon Kindle Fire tablets. Welcome back to Sci Friday from SkyWatch TV. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Sharon Gilbert, and we are recording in studio this week, loving it, having a great time. We've been doing Sci Friday for over 5 years. Mm-hmm. And it started out, if you've never seen the original Sci Friday, we will link to it maybe on Facebook, but you can find it at YouTube. I think it goes the way back to the very first episode.
Yeah, in fact, our fifth anniversary episode, which was just a couple of months ago, we replayed that first episode where you get to see the heavier us.
But who was that? Who were those people?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. But they were sitting in these chairs anyway, so I assume it was us. But Tom Horn was out of town for the weekend. So rather than doing a 5 in 10 on a Friday with the daily update that I record for SkyWatch TV, we decided to do something special, and it morphed into this weekly program.
Into Sci Friday. And we've had the best time with it. And we've been able to talk to you about all sorts of topics with the idea that science just means knowledge. Therefore, anything that humans pursue trying to increase their knowledge base is fair game. Mm-hmm. Well, we often discuss supernatural things. And so,
yes,
we're not going to tell you the name of the program, but we are in the planning, very early planning stages for a new program that we're going to be producing next year as part of the SkyWatch TV family of shows. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we probably are going to put Sci Friday on hiatus.
Yeah. The new program will require more production time. It will involve some travel to mysterious locations, to
mysterious
explore.
Mystery places.
Yes. And that will involve more time. So it won't be possible to continue doing Sci Friday. At some point in the next couple of months, Sci Friday will go on hiatus, and this new program will debut. But I think you'll enjoy and appreciate it if you've been following us over the past 5 years. This will be an opportunity for us to do more travel, for an opportunity to take you through these programs to locations that traditionally are only featured in shows that present a New Age worldview. I don't want to call out anybody by name, but you can imagine the types of programs. I'm talking about. You know, think the guy with the big hair. This is something that Tom Horn has wanted to do for a while, and so he is very much excited about this. But again, we'll have more details for you in the months ahead.
Yeah.
Still early days, but we just wanted to give you a heads up that Sci Friday will probably be drawing to a close here in the next few months.
Yeah, probably. And when I say put on hiatus, I say it that way simply because at some point we may decide there's something that's happened in the world that we simply have to have a Sci Friday special about. Mm-hmm. So Sci Friday specials are not off the table, just so you know. Also, really quickly, I want to remind you we're going to Israel next April. So speaking of traveling, we're going to do some filming there, and that will be used probably in one of these shows.
Absolutely. We've already seen some things that we hope we can produce some of the early programs of video we've already got in hand.
But, or we'll draw cartoons of it. You know,
little animations. But yes, you can join us. For more information, costs, itinerary, and so forth, you can find all that online at skywatchinisrael.com.
So where did the horns come from?
Well, it's interesting that when you look at the representations of entities in the ancient world, the iconography of the gods and the supernatural entities that are their companions, colleagues, totem animals, if you will. Mm-hmm. In ancient Sumer, gods are always depicted as having multiple sets of horns. The Apkallu, which were the divine, and by divine, I don't mean, holy and righteous, but just supernatural.
Right.
the divine entities who were the sages who brought the gifts of civilization from the clever god Enki, lord of the earth, ruler of the Apsu, the abyss, sent them forth with these gifts called the Mez that were given to humanity. Everything from be nice to your neighbor to how to brew beer. You know?
Yeah, until Inanna came along, got Enki drunk.
And stole them, yeah. But there are some accounts, though, in which the god Ninurta wound up with the Mez. So it depends on the story. And some of these things are politically motivated. When Uruk, that was the city of Nimrod, who we identify as the Sumerian king Enmerkar, brought Uruk to political dominance. At one point in the fourth millennium BC, according to archaeologists, Uruk controlled everything from Turkey to the Persian Gulf, which is amazing when you think about it, because their armies had to essentially march on foot all across it. But somehow they did it. When that took place, the political power and the religious center moved from Eridu, the city of Enki, to Uruk. Well, that's Inanna stealing the Mez. But later, Nippur, which was where the E-Kur, the house of the mountain, which was the temple of Enlil, chief god. But it was also the city of Ninurta, who was sort of like the relationship of Jesus to Yahweh. Ninurta was sort of like Enlil's right-hand man.
Right. Just if you're new to this idea, we are not talking about a pantheon. We're talking about entities that claim that they are to be worshipped.
Exactly.
They are simply from a realm that Mike Heiser calls the unseen realm.
Right. And certainly we're not saying that the Hebrews stole their religion from Mesopotamia, as many scholars argue. We are suggesting that these pagan entities, these fallen angels, lied.
Yeah.
And convinced it's fake news.
It's fake news.
Yeah, 4,000-year-old fake news.
Boy, howdy.
So anyway.
They're still counting, by the way. When they voted back then, they're still trying to figure out who gets to be in the throne at the end.
Yes, whose divine assembly gets to
whose infernal assembly?
Right, right. So the but some of the occupants of this unseen realm were bovid or bull like in appearance. In particular, the Kusariku was one Akkadian word for them, the bull men. But we've talked before on Unraveling Revelation about the nature of the cherubim, the throne guardians, and how in Ezekiel 1 and Ezekiel 10, he describes them as having four faces. And we see it also in the book of Revelation, where John describes the living creatures around the throne, the throne guardians.
Yeah, four
face
faces.
Face of human, lion, eagle, and ox.
Those actually represents 4 points on the zodiac.
Babylonian zodiac, right. And that's not coincidental.
No.
But in Ezekiel 10, he describes them as having the human face, lion's face, eagle's face, and the face of the cherub.
Right.
So the cherub and the ox, the bull, are to be equated, which is why I think we see the Lamassu, the guardians of the temple or the palace in Nineveh for the Assyrian kings, looking like a winged bull-like sphinx with lion's feet. It's got all four aspects of the cherubim in those statues.
Okay, so the reason Satan is horned is because horns represent divinity. Is that what you're saying?
Right,
or
right.
Rulership. I've seen images, and we could put one up when you edit this. Images of those horned helmets or the horns that are worn, they're triplet.
Yes.
So there are six in all.
Right, right.
But the devil image, he's just got two.
True.
Why'd he lose the four?
Well, I'm not quite sure about that. I'm not sure scholars know. I've not read any explanation of that to this point.
Can I make a recommendation?
Sure.
That a bull, the aurochs, only has two horns.
Well, that's where I was going with this.
A
scholar by the name of Nicholas Wyatt, University of Edinburgh, has written a paper called The Long Durée of the Beef Business. He's very clever, but his research is astonishing. Yes, astonishing. He writes about the bovid imagery of the supernatural realm in the ancient world and points out that not only do you have the bovid imagery connected to the cherubim, but the name of the Greek Titans, and this is also related to research by Amar Anus, a wonderful scholar from Estonia, that the etymology of the Greek gods Titans, the name for the Titans, derives from the name of an ancient Amorite tribe, the Tidanu, But that name in turn probably derives from the Akkadian name for the aurochs, which is the primitive strain of cattle. Huge. Bulls stand 6 foot at the shoulder. And you've got that connection all the way through. The Titans, the gods, even the name of the king of the Titans, Kronos, derives from the Semitic word keren, which means horned.
Yes. Well, so does Hernunos, who is one of the gods in...
The horned one, as we talked about on this program before.
Oh, yeah. Well, we see in prophecy that there is a beast coming that has multiple horns.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. A couple, in fact. Mm-hmm. Satan, described as the seven-headed dragon with 10 horns, mm-hmm. the beast from the sea in Revelation 13, representing the Antichrist. Likewise,
and then there's a little horn that comes up and...
Right.
It's speaking blasphemies.
And in fact, there are scholars who have examined that story from Daniel 7 and conclude that the little horn of the beast, the fourth beast in Daniel's vision, is actually Typhon, the chaos dragon, representative of Typhon, speaking blasphemies and so forth.
That's really interesting because it's been traditional that it represents Antiochus Epiphanes mm-hmm. as an already... but not yet, sort of a foreshadowing of the Antichrist himself. So that story goes back even farther.
Right. And it gets to what we concluded in Giants, Gods, and Dragons, that the spirit of Antichrist anyway, yes, the Antichrist will be a human, but he will be infused, possessed by the spirit of the chaos dragon, Leviathan.
Oh, yes. Well, you can order that book. It is not yet in, but
pre-order.
You can place your order. Pre-order, you bet. And you can also, you can get it through the Skywatch TV store. You can also get it at Amazon. You can pre-order it there. Also, Derek has two new novels you can order at Amazon. We don't have copies of them here in the store, but you can get a Kindle version. You can order a printed version from Amazon, and you can do that anywhere in the world.
That's right. And if you go to, you find them on Amazon, just scroll down a little ways. I've posted the official book trailers, you know, like movie trailers. The trailers are there at Amazon, so you can watch those and see.
So the Iron Dragons, interestingly enough, we're just talking about Satan and dragons. Iron Dragons and the God Conspiracy.
Yeah, which seemed very timely since it deals with a pandemic, a forced vaccine, and incarceration. So... It was written some time ago, but all of a sudden 2020 happened.
But it's been updated.
Yes, it updated for 2020. So you'll find those at Amazon.com, and we appreciate you taking a look at that. And again, bottom line is that this very old imagery of the supernatural realm or the residents of the supernatural realm being horned, and especially the bull-like imagery for those old gods who were punished and sent to the netherworld as being bull-like, horns, tails, it's no wonder that Satan is depicted with a horned entity with a tail.
The Red Dragon.
Sure. It's science. Thank you for watching. Have a blessed weekend. This is Sci Friday from Skywatch TV.